Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCPOW 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
You're being joined by your host and hostess. I'm Kevin and
Julie Saville.
And today we've got a very special guest. This one was long in the waiting. We are being joined by David Wells. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm good, thank you. I'm sorry I made you wait so long.
Oh, well, it was well worth the wait. We're here today, right?
True enough, yes.
So, popular demand.
Yes, a fan favorite from what I understand.
I'm blushing.
Oh.
You are such a fibber.
So David, just for the listeners that aren't familiar with who you are, give us a little brief history of who is David Wells.
Oh, good grief. Well, there's a story. I've had several incarnations in this one life. People mostly know me from Most Haunted, whereas I was a medium on the show, and a lot of people also know me from the astrology columns that I write for various publications. And I have some books out as well with Hay House. So I guess that's how people really know me. But I was in the Royal Navy for a decade. I sort of grew up in a little town in Scotland, a little village in Scotland, a little mining community. And what else about me? The difficult thing for me really is I like to keep my head down, which is odd considering what I do for a living. So when people ask me who are you and things, I get a bit embarrassed, quite frankly. But I kind of hope that my work speaks for itself, really.
David, do you have siblings? Were you brought up in a spiritual family?
Yes, I have one sister, and no, not particularly. My grandmother, if it came through any line, it would be my paternal grandmother. She was the one that would see things or give you these little nuggets of spiritual information. She was actually in Scotland as a, I don't know if it's anywhere else, but it's called the Brethren. It's like a kind of, and then she was Salvation Army. And not strong, not strict in any form, but she was the one who would, she kind of nurtured it in me. And she was setting my first spiritual experiences around my grandmother's house when I would speak to my grandfather and he would sing to me and talk to me. And he'd been dead for years when he was doing that. So that was a bit awkward. And I think the thing is, she believed me. She wouldn't disbelieve me. She would be the one that would say, okay. So I didn't feel quite as if it was something weird or something really truly odd,
I know that there was a specific time when you were very unwell, where everything kind of switched on. And certainly for me and my mediumship, I had a moment where, although I was well, it just happened in just kind of one blast of information came through, and it was like, whoa, something just happened there. And I had to then try and kind of understand it. When that happened to you and you were very unwell, did you just automatically know and accept that you had those abilities and that was mediumship or spirituality, or did it take some getting used to?
Certainly I didn't accept it. I kind of I would always defend, you know, things like astrology and mediumship and you know, even in the mess decks of the Royal Navy, I would be like, yeah, but yeah, I have those kind of arguments. But when it happened, yeah, and you're right, so many people come to it through that moment of suddenly everything's different. It's either, it can be an accident or it can be a family tragedy. It can be lots of different things. And some people, it's just walking across the road and wham, it happens, you know. But for me, I couldn't get to grips with the biggest thing is energy loss. The biggest thing was not sleeping, not resting at all, because, of course, the minute you go to sleep, you enter, it's almost like you go straight into the other world, and you're drained of your energy, or they're zapping your energy in some way, shape, or form, or you're constantly on. So you're effectively an uncontrolled medium, and it's just not a good place to be, you know.
So just by luck, really, because my mum was quite into mediumship, but she wasn't spiritual in herself, was bought a ticket and then was too worried about going, just too anxious about it. So at the age of 12, I was kind of... and that was probably my first insight into what happens. But then certainly it wasn't until I was in my 30s that... literally talking to somebody on the phone, and I just knew I had all of this information to share, and I didn't know where it came from, I didn't know the person very well, and I went to bed that night very upset. We'd been talking, and as you said, very uncontrolled. Well, I know this about you, I know this about you, I know that, this happened, blah, blah. And then the next morning I woke up thinking, that's mediumship, and it was just a complete acceptance. There was no challenge, internal challenge, which was quite odd.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but then I guess if you kind of know it's for you, you know, I was fighting it because it wasn't what I wanted. You know, I didn't want it because at that time it seemed to me too difficult. It was certainly physically draining for me. And also, it was slightly different for me in so much that it was, I wasn't picking up on other people's stuff. It just seemed to be like I was being attacked. You know, I felt like I was being attacked all the time, and people were just, you know, or spirits were just draining me constantly. There was nothing at that time. I couldn't see anything of value in it. So I had no one to tell the information to. I wasn't hearing anything that was particularly positive. It was all very exhausting, really.
And you talk about a term that maybe some people will be very familiar with and other people won't be, Kabbalah. Mm-hmm. And you talk about that as grounding. It keeps something that is a way of being, a way of life that keeps you grounded. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know it's something you're very passionate about.
It really truly is. I mean, you know, without it, I don't know where I would be. And I tell people it saved my life. And the truth is, it did. It absolutely saved my life. And, you know, my teacher at the time wouldn't. I did start with astrology, which is actually quite grounding itself. But I think Kabbalah, a lot of people, there's lots of different Kabbalahs. And that's because there is lots of different Kabbalah. Just the truth of it, you know, there is. But the one I studied, the Western mystic tradition, and essentially it's like a map. It's like a universal map that when you're kind of stuck, you can find out where you are and find your way back. You know, I always say to people with all of this work that it's about symbolism, and you can see, I can look at the tree and see a different symbolism in it every single time I look at it, because I'm focusing on a different part of it, on a different path or a different safari, one of the circles. Same with tarot cards. You know, I can show you a tarot card. You can say this means this, and I can see something completely different in it. Mm. But there is also within that as a universal structure. So for me, it's like a... I don't know, the best way to describe it is it's like a huge... oracle, you know, that and it never stops giving. I mean, I've been with it now for over, well, nearly 25, 30 years, and I still go, oh yeah, of course, that means this, you know, almost every day, you know.
So how does it influence your life? How do you use it?
Well, I use it in my work, so I use it to bring deeper understanding to perhaps my astrology or to the tarot. I use the Thoth deck in tarot, and it's very strong Kabbalistic references there, so I can use it in my work, if you like. But on a daily basis, in practical daily life, if I'm going through a particularly difficult time, a strong astrological kind of aspects are, especially at the moment, are quite tricky. Then what it does to me, I know where I'm being held. I know which safari or which pathway I'm being held on. And actually what it does, it kind of takes the pressure off in a little way, because it helps me understand the process of what's happening. So I'm not going blindly through it. But, you know, that's really double-edged, because part of me sometimes thinks, I wish I didn't have this information, because I would just maybe crack on and get on with it, you know, and just crash through it. And then another part of me thinks, thank goodness I've got this information, because I know what's happening. And it can be everything from my physical well-being, when I know that I'm in the process of shedding, or I'm in the process of transforming in some way, shape, or form energetically. It affects me physically. And I know that if I'm ill, not always, I'm not like everything's, you know. But if I'm not, I'm ill, I do look and think, okay, where am I in this? Well, what's happening? Why am I not feeling so great? What do I need to do to change this?
So how does this kind of diagram, this tree of life, how do you physically use that? How do you understand it?
You understand it through many, many years of studying it, number one. And I think the best way I can put it is this. If, you know, when you look at a Buddha you have an altar, or you have a room, and you have a Buddha on it, and you look at it, and immediately you feel that room, you yourself feel peaceful. You feel calm. But that's because the Buddha has been ensouled. The image of Buddha has been ensouled with everybody's energy, thinking calm, peace, calm, peace, calm, peace. And the truth of it is, it's a piece of marble, or it's a chunk of concrete, or that's what it is. But because people have invested in the symbolism of it, it automatically changes it. It transforms it into something else. With Kabbalah, that drawing that you see, and if you've never seen it before, it will just be, yeah, it's a geometric shape. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And lots of people go, ooh. And when they see it, they're naturally drawn to it. But once you understand it more, it does that Buddha thing. Once I look at it, it can bring me great peace, or it can bring me energy, or sometimes it can make me melancholy, and sometimes it has me screaming at the wall saying, why am I doing this? What's that point? But it always has an answer for me. So it's that, you know, if you're passionate about your country, and you see, you're traveling and you see your country's flag, and everything about your nation comes up inside of you, you're proud of your nation, and you feel those moments, you feel high school, you feel apple pie, you feel, you know, bangers and mash, or whatever, all within a symbol. You can attach all of that to a symbol. That's what Kabbalah does.
So if I was to say tomorrow, I've looked at this symbol, I'm attracted, there's something pulling me into this symbol, but I don't know what it is, where do I start?
Oh, at the beginning.
Yes.
That's something my teacher always used to say. She said, I don't know where to start. And she would always, always start at the beginning. And that's the truth. So you start by, first of all, getting yourself a copy of that symbol so you can see, have it around you. Obviously, one of my books might help, I'm just saying.
Absolutely.
But you also, I think, do a little bit of research, because there's various types. You know, we all know Kabbalah has this, you know, with a K, with a C, with a Q, it's all spelled differently, and you find there's some very negative things said about the one that Madonna follows, unnecessarily so. They're just all different forms. They're all different forms. Or the Judaic, and you know, you find which one suits you. And I would suggest, if you love your astrology, and if you love your tarot, and you love those esoteric teachings and paganism, and then probably the Q, as I would call it, is probably more for you. But if you love real hardcore study, and you want to know the Judaic terms and the Judaic words, you know, that Hebrew is really intrinsic to a different style of Kabbalah. So it's really how you feel you want to run it. But the secret is always, I think, with everything in life, is if you can find them, find good teachers. You know?
And that's hard to do. Like you said, there are so many versions out there. Like, you know, like Christianity, you know, you've got Catholics, you've got Baptists, you've got Methodists, and everybody sees it differently.
100%, yeah, and that's the thing. But just like, you know, if you're going into religion, you would go and you would see, does this suit me? And if it doesn't, you have to be big enough to say, this isn't for me. And I think that's one of the keys that, people, whatever it is, regardless if you're sitting in a circle, if you're doing an astrology course, you're in tarot, if it's not for you, you have to speak up and go and find out what is for you. And yeah, because, it's not one size fits all, you know.
Yes, because to us, in our form of Judaism, Kabbalah, if I had to generalize it, you've got the Talmud that explains, how God thinks, and then you've got Kabbalah. This is how God acts. This is how God does what he does. You know, you've got the nine stations of spirit which create that tree, and each one, like you said, is a different level of being.
Mm.
Did I muddy the waters, or did I?
It's very true. I think that, as Julie said earlier, where would I start? And I do mean start at the beginning. So for me, you would start at the very bottom of that diagram and try to understand that bottom safara. Because the circle, and remember they are circular. They're spheres. They're not just a circle, flat circle. They're spheres of energy. And you start to understand Malkuth, which is the earth one, and it's easy for you because that's where you live. You're there. That's where you live on this diagram. And remember, it's a symbolic diagram of the universe. It's not literal. We're not literally saying this is what it looks like. It's a symbolic diagram. So you would think, okay, I live on earth. I'm going to study this. What's this Malkuth term? What does it mean? And it's about money, it's about health, your health, it's about your well-being, it's about the powers of earth, it's about the elemental kingdoms that construct the world that we live in. And then when you've got that in your pocket and you've done the work and you've understood and probably gone to the temple and had communication with the holy powers there, like Sandalphon, for example, the archangel of humanity. Once you've done all of that, then you can maybe think about moving up to Yesod, up to the next level, and then understand what that means. And then so you go on. 11 years it took me up, down, up, and back down again. So, that's about normal, about 11 years.
It's complicated.
But it isn't. That's what I try to get to people. And also, I really believe that, I passionately believe that whilst, I'm 58 this year. So, I think my generation are the ones that had to do this without the benefits the drawbacks, perhaps, of computers and all the rest of it. I had to go to a library to find out some of this stuff, and it's quite shocking, really. But I firmly believe that the generations behind me have quicker access to it because actually they take it up quicker, they understand it quicker. So I'm here to kind of steady the ship a little bit and think, I'm not an old fuddy-duddy and I don't go, oh, you've got to do 11 years study before you get this mantle given to you. I have clients who I go and see and I think, my goodness, they're ready. Right now they're ready for this level. And I wasn't there for 45 years. And they're there in like 6 months. And they are ready. I'm not just making it up. They're ready, So I think it's just a case of giving your all to it. And it will. What I love about it is it shows up in your life. That's what's important for me about the cue. It turns up and it goes, da-da, here you are, here's your lesson. And you think, okay, I get that now. Yes, thank you. But don't do that again.
Now, when people come to you for Kabbalah, what are they really looking for?
They're looking just like most people. They're looking to understand the symbol. They feel naturally drawn towards it in some way, shape, or form. And then when I say to them that this is a very long study, they sort of then they go, they can often do something else usually, but
they want the easy fix.
Yeah, so some do, and some are ready. Some actually can move very quickly, and some maybe not so much. And they, I think the beauty is I've only ever in my life run one group course, and because I knew it would take 10 years, and that's a big commitment for anyone to make, any teacher to make. And I started with 33 people, and I have four of them now. So that's not to say that people couldn't do it, and it's no criticism of them, because people learn and then they go off and they do other things in life, and they, you know, wherever you end with Kabbalah is where you're supposed, you know, it's where you are, and all that information never goes away. It's something you will absolutely use all the time. But the point I'm trying to make is, it is a bit of a long journey. It's a bit of a tough old call sometimes. And I always say to people, you know, if you're gonna stand there and call in the gods in whichever form you do that, whether it's Wicca, whether it's Kabbalah, however you do it, if you're gonna call in the gods, you better be ready for that. You better be sure of yourself, and you better be ready, because they will come. And when they come, they will want you to walk alongside them.
Yeah. So,
at what point do you think? Sorry, Kevin. I'm just thinking, in terms of this, the diagram and the meaning behind it. From what I'm learning, David, it's like how we all learn from our own experiences and our own journeys, and how we learn those lessons. And then I know that you can also use mediumship and tarot and crystals and past life regression as part of your workings with Kabbalah.
Mm.
But in terms of how does it all fit together?
It fits together personally, and that's the key. I think you're absolutely right, and this is what I always say to people: whether you are consciously doing the Tree of Life or not, you're doing the Tree of Life. By the very fact that you're here on Earth, you're doing it. You know, you're absolutely. And I hear people talk it who have never done it, and I hear people talking it, and I think, yeah, I know where they are, or I understand maybe a bit of what would help or where to go with it. It's the same with, I heard it was a quote about someone famous, and I won't mention who they were, but whether it's true or not, you know, is another thing. But it was very sad that she said the difference between her and her friends was that she was on a spiritual path and they weren't. Now, that's shocking to me, because we're all on a spiritual path, regardless of whether you know or don't know. What this symbol means, or what that angel is, or whatever, you know, you're on a spiritual path. And I think the beauty of learning a system like Q for a lot of people now is it makes more sense of their astrology, or it makes more sense of their tarot, or more sense of their past life work, or crystals, because they're all held in some way, shape, or form in a structure. And the one thing that I think I see a lot with people is they do a workshop in crystals, then they'll have a weekend away on angels, and then they'll just do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and then they won't bring it together. They won't see the correlation between all of this is actually that more or less the same thing, and they won't be able to match it up together, and it slows them down. I think it slows them down not to have some kind of structure, you know.
So is it spirit guides and angels that are coming through on that diagram, on the wherever you are, whatever sphere you're focusing on, to guide you, or?
Yeah, they're definitely there. Your own guides will walk with you, and masters, etc. And every single, you know, every sephara has an angel attached to it. So there's one angelic being there. They also have, and I'm not really up on this because it wasn't my sphere, but they also have all the gods and goddesses from every faith and every religion you'll find on there. The same with crystals and incense. You will find a number, you will find a letter, a words, you will find lots of things. And if you break it down in its simplest form, the Sephiroth, the circles are the planets, and the pathways between them that you see are the major arcana of the tarot. So that in and of itself tells you how magic works within it. So you have all the planets, and you have all the tarot cards. In its simplest form, if you imagine then, if you know your tarot, that you're walking from Earth to Malkuth up to Yesod, and Yesod is like the moon. So Earth is what it says Earth. Yesod is the moon, so the moon is above us, which is exactly where it is. The path between Earth and the moon is the universe path. Now that's the birth canal. The universe path is like, you know, here we are. We've landed. So it makes kind of it makes a lot of sense to me, you know. So the universe path isn't exactly where it should be, but then it leads us on to Yes of the Moon, which is therefore about your subconscious. It's about your past lives. It's that gathering of astral worlds as well. They live there, so the astral worlds are just one above us, which is why we can see them. It's why as a medium we can contact the astral worlds, because it's just one above us, just the one. But if you want to talk to masters, there are a good three above you, so that's a bit of a harder path, you know.
Well, I think I just made a connection, and tell me if I'm wrong, David. Kabbalah is a representation of our energy frequencies. Like you were saying, if you want to speak to the masters, those are three levels up. So we've got to raise our energy up to that level through our study, through our learning, and, you know, this is going to sound cliche, but through our karma.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Masters aside, people will often say to me, I can't contact my spirit guide, stamping their feet and I don't know how. I can't contact my spirit guide. He or she never makes themselves known. Why won't they come to me? I'm like, whoa, princess, it's because you go to them. You know, here's the deal. You go to them. They may have contacted, you know, there are guys obviously that are around us all the time, and they are around us regardless. But it's seeing them, you're right, you need to raise your vibration that little bit. And I'm sure you know through your mediumship work, the more you work with it and the more your vibration changes, the easier the channel becomes. And actually, it seems like the higher up you can contact and you're getting longer-term information rather than just short-term stuff.
And the longer you stay in that higher vibration, the more you want to stay there. It's almost addicting.
It kind of is. And, you know, you move up a level. It's kind of like most things in life. If you get a badge, if you get a gold badge from a teacher, you want a platinum one, you know. It's same with the cars. You know, if you get into business class and you see them all in first class, that's where you want to be. So it's kind of the same, but the karmic thing, I think, is really what's important, because karmically we're all trying to refine ourselves through the challenges we've chosen. And again, there's an astrological thing. So your astrological chart fits on a tree, highlighting your karmic, the planets who you may have stronger karmic connections with, then echo in the sapphire, you're likely to have stronger karmic connections too. So some are easier, some are tougher. Some tougher for me and maybe not so tough for you, because you think, well, this is why the bottom? This is really easy, but I'm really struggling here because karmically I can't get this. It's hard for me to understand. You know?
Now, let me ask this, and this is a serious question, and I hope I'm not misunderstanding. According to your astrological chart, are some people...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
More prone to Kabbalah than others due to where they are as astrologically, you know.
Astrologically.
Yes, that was a tough word.
I've yet to show people if I've been talking about, because I always, if I'm doing a lecture or a workshop or something on astrology or tarot, I always, or past life, whatever really, I always mention Kabbalah because I think it's important that you honor your traditions. It's really important that people know that that's where it comes from, a lot of your work comes from. And I've yet to see anyone who sees the tree and doesn't go, oh, that's interesting. You know, they see it and think there's something within them. So I think it is within all of us, but you're right. And it's equally astrologically sound, though, to say that some people, you know, don't want anything to do with any of it because it's just in this incarnation. It's not where they're at. You know, they don't care about astrology. You know, they don't care about tarot. They couldn't give a monkey's about archangels. doesn't make them wrong, doesn't make them any less spiritual in any way, shape, or form. Just means in this life, it's not for you.
It's that simple.
It really is that simple, although way more complicated. That makes sense, doesn't it?
It's a conundrum. It's a paradox.
That's life.
Are there particular astrological signs that would find it harder to understand?
I think it's a good question. I think harder or probably approaching differently. You know, I would think that some signs have, for example, Geminis and Aquarians are really good at astrology because they have a mind that can have six conversations at a time. You know, and therefore they can leap around the chart, make the connections and have the conversations and draw down. Whereas a Virgo, for example, might need to write it down and be more practical, have a list about it and make sure that they've checked and double-checked those facts and figures and things and checked the math three times. Whereas, you know, someone like a Leo would love the drama of the temples, would love all the, you know, the attention and within the attention to all the grandness within temples. But they might not be so keen on the washing up after you've had some dinner. You know, but it's, I think there's an old joke that says, you know, I don't believe in astrology, typical Capricorn, you know, it's just a very old joke. And there are some signs who maybe have other things that need to be getting on with in this life. And yet I do this thing when I do seminars and things too. It opens up and it helps me raise the energy in the room and it helps me understand the energy in the room. And I say, you know, how many of each sign does it take to change a light bulb? So what's your sign, Kevin?
Taurus.
So how many Taurus does it take to change a light bulb? Like, they care as long as they can see what they're eating. They don't really mind. And what's yours?
True.
What's yours, Julie?
Cancer.
So how many cancers does it take to change a light bulb? Well, you know, first of all, that cancer's got to check with the family because that's what they do. And they have to make sure it's peachy pink to match those curtains they got last week because they don't want their home looking out of balance. So, you know, so I do that kind of thing. And that kind of... That everybody, when you do all of the signs, everybody gets that's part of who they are. That everybody looks and nudges each other and goes, "That's you. Yeah, you're just like that." So I do think that in various shapes and different, because everybody's chart, as I'm sure you know, is completely different. And there's different weights to how much spirituality they're going to deal with. If it lives in the ninth house, they want to discover more about their world through their belief systems. And there's nothing there, nothing above the horizon. They might not want to. They might not want to at all. And there are people who, you know, actively work against it, actively will go, no, it's all a complete load of all nonsense, and here's the proof. And I think that's important. I think it's really... really important because we should have that balance. There are zealots in all sorts of ways, and you know, I think that people who have absolute blind faith that everything that ever happens, it was an angel that did it, it's just as tricky as those who have no faith, you know.
So trying to find the balance when you're reading, as you were saying earlier, you know, you have a difficult situation to deal with, so you'll look at the diagram and try and make sense of it. How are you navigating all the spheres and their conflicting messages, or how do you understand them?
Well, for me, I use it in conjunction with, so I'm fully tooled up when I do a reading. So I have the tree, I have their astrological chart, and I have my tarot deck. Now, so if I'm using just astrology, and I see within the astrology as I'm talking some kind of repeating pattern around one planet, then I will look at look at my tree. Then as I'm taking cards, if something comes up that's a correlation, so say, for example, someone has a whole lot of Jupiter and there's lots of difficult things within Jupiter, then I will, and if I look at the cards and the Hermit card comes up, I know that the Hermit is linked to Jupiter. So I will know that in order to understand their gifts a bit more, and to understand what it is that they're here to do possibly, they need to retreat. They need to take some time away. They also need to look back and see how far they've come, so that they understand that this is not for them going to be the fastest of journeys, but it's a steady journey, and it's something that will work really well for them. And once they realize they don't have to hurry, because the pressure is off, you don't have to go at this at 10,000 miles an hour. You can actually take as long as you need to take. It's as simple as that. They then relax into it a bit more, and they feel more inclined to, okay, it's cool, I'm going to take some time off, and I'm just going to go and sit on the beach and ponder life and the universe, and I'll come back at it when I'm ready. So I do try to link in all of the things I'm working with. I look for correlation. That's the key. I look for repeats. I look for the same tarot coming out all the time, or the same planet being mentioned in the tarot cards all the time, or the same aspects all the time, those sort of things.
Patterns.
Do you receive the information from the tree in the same way as if I receive information from spirit, I think of it as a thought.
Yeah.
It's just something I know. And that took a little while to get the hang of, is that my thought or is it spirit's, and differentiate between the two. Is that the same way as your reading from the tree?
I think what it does is, it is the same, kind of activates something within you. So very often what will happen is I will look at the tree, look at the cars, look at their chart or whatever I'm looking at, then never look at them again for about 40 minutes, because it all just fires within you, and you're right. I listen to whoever's communicating, and it just somehow comes out. And I don't, the hardest part, I think, and you probably feel the same, guys, is that the hardest part of this work very often is getting out of your own way, is stepping aside, so you're not putting your stamp on it, that you're absolutely allowing that channel to be as clean as you can possibly make it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's a real learning, isn't it? And it must be, I mean, as a medium, you're kind of knowing that stuff, and then surely the tree is another layer completely.
I think, you know, when we do, so if we're doing spiritual development or maybe psychic development classes, then, you know, do meditation and do very nice, pleasant meditation, sit by a lake or what and reflect on the subconscious mind. It's water, subconscious mind, and use that symbolism. But then if I go and I use a meditation that involves Kabbalistic symbolism, so we go into one of the inner temples, we go into the Temple of Earth, usually that's probably the only place we'll go. So we go into the Temple of Earth, that switches things, and people will go, oh, what happened? What just happened? Because it's so ancient, and because these paths are so well-trodden, the images come to them before I even say it. I'll say something, they'll go, I saw this before you said it, and they're astounded. I'm like, well, you know, because it's there, because it's real. and I think also I've done readings without using the tree, so say if I'm doing two or three at a time, and readings with the Kabbalistic influence. And the one with the Kabbalistic influences and doing past life work using it, they exhaust me more. The energy is higher, so therefore in a physical body, they take their toll more. You know, if you teach Kabbalah, it's absolutely exhausting.
Yes. I'd like to revisit Julie's previous question. When I first started studying parapsychology, it was much more clinical than it was spiritual. Mm-hmm. Now, as you're doing these readings or you're teaching others to do this, how can we be certain that at a subconscious level we're not affecting the reading, either using Kabbalah cards or even your own intuition?
Yeah, that's the eternal question, that one. It's a really difficult one because when you're doing your reading, and these are people you've never met at all, you just don't know them at all, there is an inevitability that something in you is going to trigger a memory. Something's going to go, oh, I've seen this before, and when I saw this before, this is how it ended, or this is what happened. for me, I try my very best to be very conscious of what comes out of my mouth during readings, which is unusual for me, let me tell you, in life. It's not normally the truth, but when I do readings, I'm more conscious. What I find is that there are sometimes, and you're absolutely right, sometimes, I don't know, you guys might feel the same, sometimes I come out of a reading and I question it and I think, hang on, was that my personality? Was that my, you know, and I really struggle with it still as much as anyone else. I'll put my hand up to that. But the key to me is when I do my return and my checkup with them, and say, you know, how are you? How are things going? And they've got something from it and they've moved on, or they've removed a block, or they've changed something, challenged something, got out of their comfort zone, you know, then I think, okay, that's what's important. That's the truth of what's important.
Good. Another question, and David, this is going to sound like it's coming out of left field, but in your studies of Kabbalah, have you come across the theory of multiple universes layered on top of each other?
Not so much in my study of Kabbalah, but most certainly in my study with past life work, 100%. It's the, you know, I say to people that time is not linear, it's circular. So therefore, you know, it's things like your past life, your last. So people, we think chronologically. So your last life was in Victorian England, but that's not really necessarily the case. Your last life before this incarnation could have been in ancient Egypt. And the one before that, so going chronologically backwards, could have been Victorian England. So in other words, you don't go sequentially. You can go anywhere you like. Anywhere you want within this huge mad universe, and that's a multi-universe. And another way of explaining it is, you know, imagine, bear with, you're in Star Trek, you go into the holodeck and you go computer on, and it creates this world around you, which you are the central character, and everyone reacts around you, and you react differently, and everybody who uses that program gets a different reaction. It's that. So you come in, you go, okay, computer on, here we are, incarnated into whatever world we're in. Here's the experience I'm going to have with all my friends around me, or more soulmates around me. Computer off, okay, where do we go next? What do I need to learn next? What does my soul need to know next?
Oh, that is, I enjoy that. Thank you. I appreciate that, that it's not so linear. You know, I didn't start off as a Neanderthal, and then, you know, I slowly moved up the ladder. You can really go wherever you want.
Maybe he's just telling you, Kevin, you didn't move up any ladder.
True. Now this is going to sound a little bit silly, but before the show, me and Julie were joking around with each other, talking about past lives. Mm-hmm. And why is it that everybody, and I'm speaking very generalistically here, everybody that has had a past life was always somebody famous. They were Napoleon. They were King Tut. They were, you know, the Queen of Sheba. Nobody was ever Bob the Blacksmith, you know?
Myth. That's an absolute myth. It's not true. I've done hundreds of past life regressions, and I can count on one hand the famous people. That's an absolute myth. I think what that is people who've had famous lives like to shout about them. Because we like to let everybody know. Yeah, like to know that they've had one. And here's the thing, you know, so what if you had a famous life? It means usually that it was extraordinarily difficult, I suspect, and also that you've created, because you've affected so many people's lives, you've created huge amounts of karmic conditioning, you know, because nobody's going to get those ones perfectly. And equally, so what if you were Cleopatra? So where probably another 7,000 people, at least millions of people, have had that life too, because in the multi-universe, we could all have a go at being Cleopatra, because we need to maybe understand that for our soul's growth. So you're not that special, Cleo. That's what.
Oh, wow.
But you're right, and it's something I do hear that a lot. But when I get someone who's having a life of notoriety, I love it, because the history either matches up perfectly, which, you know, is interesting, or it's completely off. And I love that, because I did a past life regression with someone who, it doesn't matter who she was, but she died in a particular way in this past life, and I said to her, that's not what history tells us. I questioned her when she was still in her past life. And she said something really important. I've never forgotten it. She said, history is written by men and by winners. So in other words, don't believe history, because it's not always true. It's fake news.
Touché. Lesson learned.
What's the most interesting past life regression you've supported, David?
Oh, good grief. I've done past life work where someone was an alien, so they went to a life as an alien being. And interesting in many respects, because not only because of what they saw and how they were, but also in the physical, in my consulting room, they were shaking, they were going backwards and forwards and up and down. So their body was physically vibrating completely. And I actually panicked a little bit because I thought, I had never seen this before. Mm-hmm. But I persevered. I thought, no, his voice was still calm and he was still describing what he was saying. But I was thinking, oh my goodness. And his partner was with him and she was like, what's going on? Is this normal? Do they normally like practically levitate? I'm like, no, it's not normal. And afterwards, when we were talking about it and we mentioned this, he had no idea. He had no idea that he was moving in any way, shape or form. He didn't even know he was moving. So it just shows that the astral body vibrates, and it vibrates physically. It doesn't even recognize it during regression because you're so out of it. And yet completely conscious enough to say, to tell me the story. And if I said to him, do you want a cup of tea when we've done this? He would have, yeah, fine, two sugars. You know, you're not in some kind of trance. It was extraordinary. And another one that comes to mind is, because people automatically assume past lives, the past lives here on Earth, which, you know, that one clearly wasn't, the alien wasn't. But another way is also, I did a past life regression with someone and I thought, why are you just wandering around into people's houses and living there and doing this and just not, there's no care for anyone. What's going on? And I couldn't, because I see some of what's going on and I'm getting messages, obviously, from my team. And I kept saying, what's going on? And they were just saying, just wait, just wait, just wait. I was thinking, okay, just wait. And I got them to look into a mirror in a house he'd just walked in and taken over. And as he looked in the mirror, his face was half hanging off. It was like a skeleton and flesh and things hanging off. So he'd actually regressed to a life when he was a ghost.
Oh, man, I wanted to ask about that. you guys must be psychic. You took my question.
So he was haunting in this life, and we had to wind it back a bit to the point of death as to why he got stuck. Why did you get stuck here on Earth? And then we did some timeline therapy, so you release the pain of that, and you release the fact that he was haunting in that life, and worked forward from that point so we could release the feeling of isolation he always had. He felt like he just never quite fitted in, or people didn't see him. In this life, that was his big thing. People don't see me. So that's why.
In terms of past life regression then, do you naturally regress back to a poignant part, a poignant experience, or could it be quite random? So if somebody was taken back a few times, could it be different every time?
Absolutely. I say to people, you know, if it's your first one, let your soul decide. Let your soul decide what's relevant right here, right now. And that's always, to me, what happened is people get a life that's relevant. And, you know, not always famous. Usually they're feeding chickens or they're farming or they're or painting pictures or they're sort of swanning around reading books. They're very, very few of them are famous. Then we get to the point of the life and then it has this echo into what they're doing now. So it has to, the value of it is it's a cycle, it's a repeat karmic condition that you are repeating now, and your soul will say to you, you're still doing this, and chronologically, with your chronological earthly head on, you've been doing this for 700 years. Perhaps you want to change it now. Maybe after 700 years, you want to do something different. And when you hear that, you think, yeah, I kind of do, really. I've done enough of this. I've been in this relationship with this soul far too many times, and now I need to change. You know, so it's, but once you get the hang of it, and once you understand the process, and once you've had a return and done a few, perhaps, you can say, I'd like to visit this planet because I feel there's more information I need to find out. Or I keep getting this call to Egypt and I just want to ask perhaps if I can see what this means. It doesn't guarantee it, though. It never guarantees it because your soul may have another idea.
Can you go back as an animal?
Interesting question. I have never experienced a past life regression where someone stayed as an animal, but I have seen them where they have returned to being an animal. But it's been part of a journey where they've been going backwards and they go, oh my goodness, I'm a horse. And I'm thinking, okay, so what do you, and then they've gone on to, wait a minute, I'm going back, I'm coming back, and I'm now in another life. So I've heard them say it. But I think it's, from what I understand from talking to my guys, you know, as you do. So if you've been human, you don't then become animal. You can remember the life, but you don't go physically. You don't go back into an animal life.
Why not?
Yeah, I'd quite like to go back as a cat. I love a cat. Just, you know, does the same thing and relies on people to pop their food down, but then you just leave again.
I know who people who live like that, so you don't have to be a cat. I think it's because it seems to me that what happens is the animal kingdoms who have past lives of their own, and they have soul journeys of their own, they form, if you like, a group of souls, and that group of souls then becomes human. So then as the human soul develops, it wants to learn more and understand more. So because the truth is that all of us at one point were nothing but a spark, nothing but a leaf in the wind, nothing but the part of a tree. That's the truth of it. We were and are made from stardust. So we've always got that little part of us, which is why some of us graduate towards water and some towards mountains.
Well, I want to come back as a cat so I can lay around and lick myself.
Okay. Thanks for that image.
So, David, before we let you go, you've written a number of books. Hmm. Where are those available at, and where can the listeners find those?
You can get them through the usual places, Amazon and Book Depository. So if you're overseas, and Book Depository is great because they don't charge you any postage whatsoever. You can get them from Hay House website as well. I don't have them on my website because some of them are print, or quite a few of them are print on demand. So, you know, you can get it next day from Amazon, but if I wanted 20 of them, I have to wait 4 weeks, go figure.
Oh, wow.
I know, it's quite bonkers, really, isn't it? But such is the world we live in. And also, you know, I do courses and readings and mentorship and things. And you can find out more on davidwells.co.uk, which is my website.
Before we close, David, if you could just explain to people exactly what would be involved in you working alongside somebody. So what help might you be able to give to people?
It really depends. You know, I'm very keen to run bespoke services for people on mentorship. So we have a dialogue, we have a discovery call. So I talk about what their needs, short term or long term, whether it's development of their, intuition and awareness. Sometimes it's going deeper and using some of the processes of the Tree of Life to help them enhance their own practices. Sometimes, obviously, it's past life work. Because they feel stuck or blocked with past lives, and they know it's from past lives, but they don't know who or what. And also, it's a lot of the work that I do is really based around, it's really odd, isn't it? I mean, I know you guys will understand a bit, and I'm sure many of you listeners will understand. It's the exchange of energy. It's the bouncing your energy off someone else and helping them, I think, to understand their own symbols, the symbols and the way in which their own energy is working. The key to all of this, you know, if I could leave you with just one thing, I think is absolutely the secret to all of this, is that is to understand your subconscious, understand the way that symbolism works for you and the symbols that it produces, and feed it, give it as many symbols as you can. Feed it all of these different ways for it to spark the messages for you, and it will work wonders.
Wow, that's great.
Wow. Yeah, what an hour and an honour, David. I am sat here with a little bowl of Maltesers, a glass of red wine, co-host Kevin, and David Wells. It doesn't get better than that.
Maltesers, chocolate.
Yeah, well, I won't put them in order of favourite, but that's what we have. It's been a fabulous hour, and I really don't think that we haven't touched the kind of the tip of the iceberg in your knowledge about Kabbalah and spirituality and mediumship and all of those things. It's just been fascinating, and I really hope that you come back on the show and talk to us some more.
Thank you. I've really, really enjoyed myself. And I will come back, yes, I'm sure.
As have we.
Yeah, we just like a conversation, and before any interview, I don't do any research. I mean, clearly, I know of you, David, anyway, but I don't go in, I don't research things, because I like the conversation. And if I'm curious about something, you can rest assured that the majority of our listeners will also have the same burning questions. And they may sound basic at times, or they may sound a bit complicated at times, but they're questions that go through people's minds. And you've answered everything so clearly. It's been an amazing hour.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.